I would read these stories of people who are enslaved. And then whether it's the teacher in me or the minister or the inspirational speaker in me, I would look at a person looks a lot like what I read when I was in college studying history, but they aren't necessarily owned or bound to a person. They're more so bound to an idea. They're bound to what somebody said to them. Slave no more, conquering the master within.
Lynn Thompson with Paul Henderson here about your book. We were introduced last August, in August of 2020. It's near the end of March 2021. And it's a lot of steps. It's a big commitment to write a book, isn't it? To follow it through.
It's almost like every step, I wouldn't say seems so major, but every step is major. Mm-hmm. You know, from figuring out exactly what you want to write about, what's going to be the flow. In my instance, the book came out as inspirational fiction, but I can't say that that was the original intent.
Tell us the name of the book and why you called it that.
The title of the book is Slave No More. And as of Monday, we have a subtitle, Slave No More, Conquering the Master Within. And I'm really excited about that because I didn't want to confuse it with chattel slavery, you know, people owning people and so on and so forth. It's based on more of a mindset, being enslaved to limiting thoughts, being enslaved to past life circumstances, family situations that you've had a hard time breaking out of. That was more so of the thought process that I had when I initially had the idea 10 or more years ago, probably late in my college career or early in my professional career when I was with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I had this idea, and at the time I was comparing it to actual slavery, which is simply a just being bound. Lean back up a little bit. I was actually a history major at VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University. And a lot of my studies, I actually studied slavery, the slave trade and, you know, slavery in the Caribbean, slavery in the United States. So I would read these stories of people who are enslaved. And then whether it's the teacher in me or the minister or the inspirational speaker in me, I would look at a person looks a lot like what I read when I was in college studying history, but they aren't necessarily owned or bound to a person. They're more so bound to an idea. They're bound to what somebody said to them, you know, including myself. You know, I had limiting thoughts. I definitely had limiting thoughts as well. I also found that through mentorships, through somebody pouring into your life, to somebody giving you a hand up, you don't have to be bound to those situations. You don't have to be bound to those circumstances. So that's kind of how the book came to be. I knew that I had an idea in mind.
I'm just sort of picturing where you first started writing down some ideas to where it is now and where you can see it now on the horizon.
You know, the story goes, I was out of work at the time. I was teaching at an alternative school. And unfortunately, due to a lack of funding, they had to close my campus down. Okay. So once they closed my campus down, I was like, I'm out of a job. You know, after the first semester, you would think as a teacher, you're going to have a job for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
But halfway through the school year, they shut the campus down. So for about half a year, I was without a job. During that time, you know, you're looking for a job every day, taking care of the family. My wife and I actually had our third child during that period. So we were trying to figure out where our next meal was going to come from. I mean, there were so many different factors there. And then in April of that year, I said, you know what? I've had this book just circulating in my mind for so long, and maybe it's time to start writing. You know, I have more time than I've ever had before. So I started writing. And, you know, once again, I knew that I had an idea of what I wanted the topic of the book to be. I knew that I wanted the title to be Slave No More, but it didn't come out exactly how I thought it would. I thought it was going to be, you know, a book with different principles and just different people. One chapter here, somebody telling their story, another chapter here, someone else telling their story. But when I started writing, all of a sudden, all these characters came in mind. And next thing I know, I have an inspirational fiction book with real stories to help drive the book. So definitely major. So many people have been asking me, hey, Paul, when's your book coming out? When's your book coming out? And I would say 2021 felt pretty good about it, felt pretty comfortable saying that, but I wasn't completely sure. So Monday was such an awesome time. You know, the entrepreneurial vision call with Morgan James, it was unbelievable. And now we have like this entire timeline right in front of us. And it's like, okay, it was already real, but it's like even more real now. So it's definitely exciting.
Yeah, that was a great call with Morgan James team there to move things along through this year. And like you say, it just makes it so real. Yeah, inspirational fiction. And yet during the call on Monday, it sounds like they're going more as a parable.
Right. Which is interesting because I think you've seen that. I believe two of my testimonials, I want to say Johnny Shelton and Ty Newell's testimonials actually referred to it as a parable. That's actually some of the idea that I had when I was writing it, a parable, a story with a message. So that's what I was really thinking. So I was glad that they were able to come in and say, hey, this is a parable. So I'm definitely excited and satisfied with that. And what happened was over the years, I would hear different people's stories. One character's name in the book is Rosa Rogers. And I remember the first time I heard her story. I mean, I was just amazed at how a woman who was told at 7 years old that she could no longer go to school because of the color of her skin. That was actually a county ordinance. You can't go to school because of the color of your skin because the schools refused to integrate. And to see how 5 years later, the schools opened back up. And not only did she graduate when so many people who are in the very same situation, they didn't graduate. Not only did she graduate, but she thrived. And she ended up having a successful career as a nurse. And the awesome part of that personally is that she watches my boys now. She's about 70 years old and she watches my four little boys now. So to me, I would look at her story and I'm like, wow, she made it this far. She told me that so many of her friends, they didn't because of that mindset that they had a hard time breaking free from. So I probably said more than what you're asking for.
When you started the book, probably had extra pressure of limiting thoughts at the time because you were out of a job without expecting to be, and you weren't quite sure what was going to turn that around. So you didn't have to start writing a book at that time. You chose that as a way to keep yourself moving forward and to do something productive.
You know, it's funny, Lynn, is my wife would often remind me of that. My wife, Kiera, she would often say, Paul, not everybody loses their job for whatever reason and chooses to write an entire book. you're right. I absolutely have those days. I remember the day we found out that our campus was shutting down. I mean, I think my mind was just circulating with all kinds of thoughts, and I've never been laid off before. I mean, I never had anything along those lines happen. My wife is pregnant with our third child, and I had these other two children at home. My wife, wasn't working a job where she could take care of our family. It was more so a supportive income. And I was like, how in the world are we going to make it through this? So I started writing a book 3 months after the school shut down. So by that time, I was definitely, frustrated. I can't tell you how many jobs I had applied to by then, and for no one to really show any strong interest was frustrating. And it was almost like, okay, I'm on a journey right now, and I literally don't see the end. I don't see the end. But I begin to remember that my life has a purpose. And I begin to remember that my life has a plan that's already mapped out. And the funny thing, because this is my personal belief, my life is like a map. Everyone's life has some type of map, some type of roadmap. We don't always know where it ends up. We don't always know where that map leads to. We set goals, we have vision boards and all of that good stuff, but we can't necessarily predict how each day will play out. But at the same time, having that vision is such a powerful thing because I knew that I wanted to be someone who had an impact on other people's lives. I knew that I wanted to have an impact on my time here on this earth. And I began to go back to, okay, Paul, you said you wanted to write. You say you want to speak. Maybe now's a good time to start. Why not? And that's how it started. But I definitely give credit to my wife for just reminding me and encouraging me along the way. Those nights, 12 a.m. to 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. and she's there with me and she'll nod off and wake up. And I say, hey, can you read this part? And it was just so exciting because I had never written before outside of papers, outside of term papers for school. So it was definitely such an exciting time.
Well, it was almost like that was an extra companion for you through that time to keep you company and inspired and on track with it all, hey?
Absolutely.
You have an interesting background as a sports chaplain, an author, a motivational speaker, and you were a former track and field athlete at Virginia Commonwealth University. And you have a blog, Fatherhood on the Fly.
Right, right.
How long have you been doing that?
I started the blog about July of 2020.
Okay.
And what would happen is I was starting probably a few months before that, my boys played their first season of soccer. And after their games, I was one of the coaches, and I knew nothing about soccer, especially for little kids. And I think the main thing for them is just kick the ball in the right goal.
Running around.
So what happened was after the games, you know, we didn't win too many games. And what I would take my phone out and just record myself halfway silly, but also encouraging, hey, Dad, let's just get out there and spend some time with our kids. Because at the end of the day, no one can take away the time that I was able to spend with my boys during that time. So I'll record a video, you know, talking about we lost and talk about how we lost and, you know, how I encouraged my team. You got to keep fighting to the end and so on and so forth. And so what was happening was the videos would get a really good response from my friends and family. And then I record a few more videos a few months later after the season ended. And the responses were so good. I would just tell stories about a situation that had happened from, you know, at home. And I think I looked at one video and like over 1,000 people looked at it. And I got such a good feedback. And I said, hey, why don't we start, you know, a blog, Fatherhood on the Fly? Because that's something I would always say, Fatherhood on the Fly. And I had two friends, actually my sister-in-law and one of my best friends said, Paul, you need to do something with that Fatherhood on the Fly. That's really catchy. So from there, I continue to record videos, you know, situational videos from things that happen at home. I've also started to mix in some encouraging videos, you know, to different fathers out there who may feel inadequate. You know, maybe they're on this journey of fatherhood without having a father in their lives. So they're trying to figure out, okay, how do I do this? How am I an impactful or an effective father to my children when I didn't have that model, you know? So part of it is I just want to encourage them. I do some through videos, some through writing short blogs. So far, you know, once again, I've had one that's reached close to 20,000 people, which I never really expected because, you know, when I write it, I'm writing from my heart and in different blogs have picked, you know, a few things up. So that's been pretty exciting. Mm-hmm.
So Slave No More, and the subtitle is Conquering the Master Within. Just imagine a reader picking up your book in the summer when it's a physical book in your hand. What's that going to feel like to you? And what do you imagine and envision for the reader?
You know, just you saying in the summer, holding that as a physical copy in my hand, this is still surreal. It's because it was actually July of last year when I started looking for an editor. And then, you know, by August, we were working together. And so, you know, I just want to express my appreciation to you, Lynn.
Yeah, and my pleasure. Yeah.
I like what Jim said on Monday. He said he felt like it was an important message, but he said I wrote it in an easy way. And I never heard it that way, but I know that's what I was going for. I was really looking to write in a way where we're tackling, you know, limiting thoughts, you know, however those limiting thoughts may have come, you know, family circumstances, physical ailments, however those limiting thoughts or circumstances have come. How can we address those issues in a way that's encouraging, empowering, if you will? And my goal is that when people read my book, that they leave empowered, you know, and they say, wow, that was, you know, they feel like they can make it. If they're on step 5 and they feel like step 7 is too far, let's help them to get to step 6, because step 6 is a little bit closer to step 7, you know? My hope and my prayer is that people will feel empowered. People will feel like, hey, I can do this. And if they read my book and they come away with a little bit more hope, I'm satisfied. Now let's move on from hope into action, into accomplishing. But I think there's something about having just a little bit more hope.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that anyone, regardless of their age, can be positively impacted by your book. Because young people, great, they get that early on. But even, you know, remember when we were talking to David Hancock at Morgan James when we had our first call with him, and you were describing that aspect of how people are talked over and how that influences their attitude. And he even came up with some ideas of how comments had affected him from early on. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. And then I think about it. There's one statement, you know, the main character's name is Bobby. And I believe it's in the second or third chapter. I forget exactly which chapter it is, but I remember the thought because it was a personal experience. Bobby was told that, you know, we could have the strongest secondary in the conference, but, you know, then the coach looked at Bobby and said, you're the weakest link. Well, that actually happened to me. It wasn't football, but it was track and field. And now, granted, the coach that said this to me, this was his way of motivating me. And I got what he was trying to do, but I'll be honest, I've dealt with that. And to this day, I still have to battle those thoughts. You know, I don't want to be the weak link on my team. You know, and he said this close to 20 years ago now. And I can't believe I'm saying 20 years ago, but close to 20 years ago, he said, Paul, we could have the best 4x8 team in our district and possibly one of the top 4x8 teams in the state. And he was looking at the group of us. And then he said, but Paul, you're the weakest link. And Lynn, that did something to me. You know, once again, I ended up having a great relationship with him. But words are, you know, they're so powerful. I'm 35 years old. And to this day, I still have to combat that limiting thought. I don't want to be the weakest link on my team, whether it's at work, you know, whether it's I'm working on, you know, something with my church, you know, I work with the kids in my church. I don't want to be the weak link as a part of the team. And I constantly have to overcome that thought. So whether things like David said, things were spoken over him. And, you know, you look at the success that he and his wife have had now, you know, him personally being in the mortgage industry, and then he's carried the success in the writing books. Now he actually has the, you know, a publishing company where he's helped authors like myself, you know, get published. Now, what if he would have allowed himself to stay bound to those limiting thoughts from when he was in, you know, high school or whenever they were?
And I'm just thinking on the other side of it, remembering when we're speaking to people, the effect of our words on them.
Absolutely.
If that coach of yours, that's really intense what he said to you. And imagine, even if it wasn't true at the time, even if there was room for improvement for you, and if he had said, you know, we have the potential for all of this as a team, you know, and Paul, you're really strengthening on, you know, this play, or you did a really good move, you know, in that last strategy that we worked. Like if he gave you something to build on rather than undermining your confidence, if he gave you something to build that confidence on, even if you still had room to improve, which we all do, you would have had a whole different sense of yourself, your sense of connection with him, with the team. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
That's something that even with my boys now, you know, having four boys, you know, we have an atmosphere in our household where we speak life to each other. And I don't allow people to spend too much time with my children. If I hear them speaking negative things over or around my children, we don't allow that because right now our children are so impressed. My oldest is 8 years old. And until we're able to teach them how to combat those things, it's like right now, it's almost like we have to protect them, you know, knowing that growing up, they'll have to learn how to, okay, someone said this about me, what do I do with that? With my 8-year-old, we're a little bit further along with that, but every once in a while, you know, it could be a family member that'll say, hey, you know, his name is PJ. Hey, PJ, you so-and-so. He'll come and tell my wife and I, and this, and unfortunately this has happened. He'll come tell my wife and I, and we have to tell him how to combat that thought that someone else who probably didn't mean any harm, there probably wasn't any ill intent, if you will, but the reality is it was said and it affected him. So it's like, okay, how do you deal with that? Even at 8 years old, he has to learn now.
Well, for sure. And you're giving him tools. I mean, if you weren't aware of that or conscious of the effect of that, I mean, it could just get all settled into his mind, you know, and just the fact that he's bringing that to you is a good testament too.
Yeah, absolutely. We're thankful and we do our best to keep the lines. You know, one thing I say with my blog, Fatherhood on the Fly, is that we're learning, we're growing, and we're getting better one day at a time. And that's one thing that Kiara and I, we're learning. And every time our son brings something to us, or any of our children bring anything to us, it's a victory. We're like, thank you for bringing it to us, you know, because we want to help them. We want to help them. And we want them to know that the lines of communication are open. And it's okay to tell mommy and daddy what's going on so that we can help them with some of the same things what we've learned. My second son is 6 years old and he's had some, you know, some special needs. But one thing that Kiara and I do is we constantly tell them, hey, you can do anything. You know, because you'll see him put something together and it's like, how the heck did you do that at 6 years old? He started at 4 or 5 years old, giving these like magnificent train sets. I'm like, how? I can't even fathom how you even thought to do this, you know. But when it comes to like just different verbal things, he may struggle a little bit. So we have to constantly encourage him. We don't beat him down at all. And even though sometimes he may not learn as fast as I want him to learn, I have to remember that he's on his own path. He's on his own journey. And it's my job as his father to continue to encourage him and celebrate the small victories. It's good and it's actually awesome to celebrate the small victories.
Yeah. Well, Paul Henderson, it's really been a delight to speak with you and collaborate with you on the editing of your book. It's just been a wonderful experience. Thank you for welcoming me into your family and your authorship life.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for welcoming my family into your world somewhere up there.
Yeah, somewhere up there in Canada.
Yeah, right. Very appreciative. And I also want to thank you for introducing me to, you know, to Morgan James. At the time I was, you know, prior to meeting Morgan James and David Hancock, and I was dead set on self-publishing. I didn't exactly know what I was doing. And when I got a little closer to layout, I realized, okay, I probably need a little help with this. I probably could have figured some things out going the self-publishing route. Just hearing Morgan James, like their methodology and also the heart behind the company and just seeing how they look to support entrepreneurial authors, I felt like it was a match made in heaven. And I'm forever grateful for David Hancock accepting my manuscript. I really hope to bring a lot of value to Morgan James and to their vision and to create a very strong partnership. Morgan James is like the thing that you needed that you didn't know that you needed, you know? I didn't realize that what they offer is what I was looking for. But all along, that's actually, you know, everything that they have to offer is exactly what I was looking for. So I'm so excited for the partnership.
Oh, that's great. Well, we have more steps to come. We'll be talking about finalizing the manuscript in the next week and the covers being fine-tuned. And any last thoughts, Paul?
Take one step at a time. You know, everything doesn't happen overnight. It's something I'm constantly learning on, you know, my end as well. You know, one step at a time, overcoming, you know, you overcome a mountain one step at a time. So that's my hope that people get and learn and take from, you know, my book, my story.
Yeah, right on. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Absolutely.
All right.
Slave No More, Conquering the Master Within.